You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 133.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
All right, everyone, you have reached another Local Maximum. Welcome to the show. Today I'm joined by Aaron. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing well. It's another summer night on the East Coast here.
Yeah, I know. It feels kind of warm for some reason. And you know what? When was the last time? I think it feels like we just spoke recently, but I feel like it's been over a month since we've done a podcast together. I mean, well, we recorded two at once. That's why.
Yeah, it's doubleheader throws things off a little bit.
Yeah, we should do more doubleheaders. There's not going to be a doubleheader today. Today we're going to try something a little new because I've always been fascinated. You know, I'm into machine learning and all that and Bayesian inference. I talk about it all the time on here. For some reason, I'm interested in a mathematical field called topology. And I say for some reason, maybe we could figure out, why I'm so interested in it. I have some ideas, but maybe I haven't really explained this to anyone else yet. So we're going to try to have a conversation and see if we can put the pieces together. So this is not going to be kind of a course material yet, but let's just have a conversation about it. Before we start, let's talk about what's going on with the Local Maximum and with the news in general. The one news item that I wanted to follow up on, one of my favorite episodes that we've done previously was 114. That was the one with that was the one with smart toilets. You remember that one?
how could I forget?
Yes, how could I? Well, actually, I went through all of the episodes recently, and I painstakingly wrote URL slugs for them for SEO. And let me tell you, I think I remembered most of them. There might have been a few episodes that I wouldn't have been able to recall, but very interesting. Kind of remember what they were all about. But anyway, in that one, we talked about, Joe Biden joining the Potiverse. And I was kind of excited about that. The presidential candidates were having their own podcasts and going on podcasts. And I thought, maybe I can't get them on my show. But, as you can always do, maybe you can get a guest of theirs also on your show. That's always possible. Or that's if you have a small show, you can do that. But, man, it turned out. So I talked today. Tonight's the night of the DNC. It turned out he hasn't updated his podcast since May 11th. So it's been a while.
I know we talked a couple weeks ago and you mentioned that it had gone dormant. I thought right now you were going to tell me that they'd revived it and they were going to be coming out with new, Kamala and the Joe episodes revitalized by the fresh blood. But
I don't think maybe
they will, but they haven't announced it yet, apparently.
Yeah, I don't think this is the year it's going to happen. I think they realize this is hard work.
And on the other side, Trump doesn't strike me as a podcast kind of guy.
No,
I think he'd go straight for video. It's either tweets or video. Podcast is a middle ground that he sees no use for.
I mean, you could probably put him on a microphone and see what happens. That would get a lot of listens, but they haven't done it yet.
Well, and apparently he calls into, what is it, like Fox and Friends, or at least he used to quite frequently. But
sure.
That's a little bit different. Anyway.
I feel like for him, that's just like interactive TV.
Well, what we really need to do is set up a call-in number. So if there are any presidential candidates their running mates who want to call into the Local Maximum, you just dial 555-5555.
All right, I think the folks are going to get annoyed that we're not getting to the point here, because, and also this is not a, we're making this very non-evergreen by talking about this, so maybe we can move on. So yeah. I know we've got
to those of you in the future, I hope everything's better and all the problems have been solved. So let's now move on to something that has nothing to do with politics.
I'm sure it is. Okay, so first of all, but before we get into the questions, like what did you know about topology before going into this, Aaron?
When you say topology, I think of topo maps, which I'm sure that there's some connection to that.
Is that like I don't know what topo maps are.
Oh yeah, the topological maps. They're the maps with the rings that show you, what the elevation is, which I'm sure has some, base level connection here. But you're not talking about the geography side of things.
Right.
My impression is you're much more on the theoretical mathematics side here.
Right. So I think that's called topography versus topology.
Oh, but, you might be right.
Yeah, but I'm not.
This is the problem with shortening things.
No, I mean it's a good distinction. So, all right. So cool. We can get started, and let's see if we could figure out what this thing is.
Well, let's. Actually, I want to deviate
we're talk
from the
about
basics.
Pointless topology. Yeah. Okay.
So you mentioned before, you know, it's unclear why you're so particularly interested in this, but just. When did you first get interested in topology? Does this predate your interest in machine learning?
I think it does. And by the way, we're trying to figure out whether it's pointless or not. And in a sense, it is, because at the end, we're going to talk about an even lesser known field called pointless topology, which is one of the more mind-blowing things. So, yes, I feel like I had read a little bit about it as an undergrad, and I tried to get into it, but I didn't quite grasp what these math books were trying to say about it. And now I feel like I have a much better grasp of it, and so I could actually explain it to the folks here in the Local Maximum, you, the listener. I would say that... So when did I get re-interested in it would be a good question.
Was this something that really clicked like during grad school, or was this more you were exploring it on your own?
On my own, probably in like 2015.
Gotcha.
And now I've gotten circled back to it.
So that's a little bit of background there, but let's get back to the fundamentals here. So
sure,
what is topology? I'm going to throw out the basic, most open ended question I could think
of
here.
No, that's a good question, because there's no obvious answer to it. And I looked at some of my math textbooks here, and they don't really do a very good job of defining it. They say, introduction to topology. All right, here's your first definition. And it's like, wait a minute. What is this thing? So as far as I can tell, it's the study of certain types of mathematical objects, certain types of spaces. And so the spaces that we are most familiar with on the Local Maximum would be, you know, what I would call hypothesis spaces. Like, hey, I have a bunch of things that I'm not sure whether they're true or not, and I'm going to like arrange them somehow. Or, you know, you could think of like Euclidean space. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, you know, I know you went to MIT, you know, Euclidean spaces, but like how would we describe that? Like, let's say like three-dimensional space. So it's kind of like the study of the how space is connected, how locations are connected to each other.
So I was going to ask, is this physical or is it something more abstract? And it sounds like the answer is both.
So it's definitely,
or it can be either.
I think it's totally abstract, like a number is abstract or real numbers are abstract. But obviously, it has some relationship to the real world. Otherwise, you wouldn't be like studying it.
Sure.
So,
you could use it for like physical objects in spaces, but also for some of these more abstract stuff. You know, if we're putting stuff in a matrix of data points and how they relate to each other as well. Even if that's not their physical relationship, it's something like you said, more abstract.
Oh yeah. It could be used to, you know, you could be talking about something that is where you're thinking of a physical object, and I'm sure it can apply to areas where you're not talking about physical objects, like a hypothesis space. This is not a physical object.
Yeah, you can only stroll through a hypothesis space in the most abstract of fashions.
Right, exactly. So, you know, some of the big ideas in topology are continuity. Like it looks at, you know, hey, you know, if you have a curve, there's like some continuity there. You're not like lifting up your pen, as they'll often say in math class, you know, in high school. But, you know, this kind of formalizes it a little bit. And the thing about topology is that distances don't matter anymore. It's only shape and form that matters. So I wrote here like a football equals a basketball. And the reason why a football equals a basketball in topology, the idea is this, like, okay, you take a football and you kind of blow it up and you kind of push the sides in so it's like it's round, and then you kind of expand it like a basketball. And if I'm standing, if I have a point on the somewhere on that football and then I look at the points around me before the transformation, and then I look at the points around me after the transformation, they're the same points.
So the distances could change, but you've already said that the distances are irrelevant. So it's you know, if you're a node and what nodes are you connected to is what matters.
Exactly. And then there are a lot of, and that's a good way of putting it, like there are a lot of real world situations where it's the connections that matter. And, you know, the way I say it, like one key term in topology is neighborhood. So neighborhood is like the points that are around you. And so, you know, I say, hey, let's suppose we all live together in one city, and then one day something happens and we all have to move to another city. I couldn't imagine a situation where that would come up. I guess a year ago, I could never imagine a situation where that would come up. Okay, and then we move to our new city, and then, hey, what do you know? All of your old neighbors are the same as your new neighbors. That is a topological transformation that is, it's like a, you know, it's an isomorphism. You got the same neighbors as before, so you're kind of in the same situation. Even if, you know, the density is different. You know, let's say you have bigger plots of land or something like that, or your land's now long and skinny rather than square.
I can only dismiss or I can only accept the fact that distances are irrelevant if I don't think about it too hard. So I'm gonna shove that in the back of my head and try and move forward with this.
Well, okay, I think it'll become more clear as time goes on. As we talk about this more.
Okay, so we've got, you said it's who your neighbors are, but what was the other feature? It was the curves and...
So we'll get to this in a minute when I want to talk. Yeah. A good example here is like a donut. The surface of a donut is not equivalent to the surface of a ball or basketball because you can't transform a donut into, so this coffee mug, this mug that I have here with my tea, you can transform this, the surface of this into a surface of a donut because it's got one hole in it. But, you know, it would be a weird transformation, but you could do it. And so that's sort of how topologists classify surfaces.
I'm envisioning something very trippy with the transformation of a coffee cup into a donut.
Right. So you basically would flatten it, and then you'd have to make like the handle really big, and then that becomes the donut. Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking. Okay, so we're talking about the hole between the handle and the body,
exactly.
Not the hole into which you pour the liquid.
No. So if there's no handle, okay. If there's no handle, it's the same as a basketball.
Okay, that clarifies something. I don't know if it's helpful, but
you basically punch in the basketball and you make a little indent, and that becomes like the tea or coffee goes in the cup, and then you keep pulling it. And then
okay,
it becomes
I'm
the
with
cup.
You on that. Hopefully, those of you listening have excellent spatial memories, spatial visualization, and we have not completely lost you.
Yeah.
So, I have the most vague idea of what. The concept is here.
Okay.
But why do we care?
Right.
What is this good for? And you've said that there are obviously applications. You can take this thoroughly abstract concept and use it for something, but what is that something?
So one thing that I'm thinking about in terms of machine learning, in terms of Bayesian inference, is we've talked about the nearest neighbor algorithm before. We've talked about, I don't remember which one was nearest neighbor, but I remember in episode 4 we did that where I cracked those codes that you generated. Do you remember that?
Yep.
The substitution cipher? So the assumption there was that solutions that are nearby to the solution that I'm at are going to be similar, more or less. And that kind of allows us to do hill climbing. It's like, well, I have a solution right now. It might not be very good, but I look at the solutions around me, and then I jump to one that is better, and then I keep doing that. And then when I jump to one that's better, the ones around that are gonna tend to be, I could probably find one that's better than that. And you could keep doing that and doing that until you reach a local maximum, until you get to what could be a good solution, or at least a lot better than you're starting with. That's hill climbing. And so I think topology comes up with this, is if your hypothesis space is a topological space, then that defines where your neighbors are, and then that is the most general kind of space where you can have kind of a hill climbing algorithm in. And what's interesting about it is that distances, since distances don't matter, oftentimes, like, you know, okay, a lot of times in the nearest neighbor algorithms in machine learning, it's all about distance, right? I want to find the perfect analogies, or the most closely perfect analogies. I want to find the examples that are most close to the ones that I am trying to predict. So let's use an example. Let's use a presidential election, right? We have this year's presidential election, and then we have how many examples of presidential elections? I don't know exactly how many, but I'm not going to try to.
We've got 45 presidents. But, yeah, more elections than that.
I'm not going to try to do it in my head. I mean, there's 25 a century, so there's at least, I don't know, it's 50 something. So you define some distance metric on the presidential elections, and you say, okay, what's the most similar one to this one? What's the best analogy? And if you look at the pundits, they're always trying to come up with analogies. But the problem is, any distance metric that you come up with, you could say, hey, this is a bad distance metric. I have another one that's better, and that's why this year is more like this other year and not like the year that you were saying. And so when you just talk about the connections and stop thinking about the distances, that kind of allows you to think, okay, what distance metrics can I impose on this? And maybe we could try a few different ones.
Okay, so if...
And by the way, I don't think... No, like, I haven't found machine learning researchers who talk about topological spaces in this way. This is just what I'm speculating.
Well, is that a case of they don't talk about it in these terms, but that's what's underlying the process?
Yes, it could be
an adjacency.
It could be, but most of the time they're just using like Euclidean space, or they're using like, you know, something very a little less abstract, which might make sense. But
okay, so how does this differ from? I guess we said in the context of the k nearest neighbor and that type of thing that. I assume we were working in more of a vector space type approach.
Right.
What separates this from that?
So a vector space usually has distances, and a vector space has more structure than a topological space. And as you know, you must have taken some really trippy calculus courses at MIT. Am I wrong about that? Like, they probably told you, like, here's a vector space that somehow represents like space as you know it in the real world, but they might have given you extra dimensions, and they might have been like, hey, you multiply it by this matrix, and then it like stretches and it's.
I never got into the nitty gritty math stuff. Multivariable calc and then differential equations, and then beyond that I did a bunch of numerical method stuff, but I didn't go into like, I don't know, would that be leaning into the linear algebra direction?
So anyway, it just has a lot more structure in terms of how how the space is arranged. Where topological space is more general, it's like, no, like, these are the points that are, you know, it's like, this is how the space is connected to how the points connect together. And I don't care about distances. I don't care about angles. I don't care about, you know, lot of things you might want to care about in engineering.
This is hurting my engineer brain, because those are the only things that we care about.
Right, right. But but in some areas, specifically like in physics, shape becomes more important. So, yes. But oftentimes you start with a topology, and then you could impose, as I said, like distance and form on top of it. I just want to cut in here to talk about another awesome podcast. When the New Yorker magazine asked Mark Zuckerberg how he gets his news, he said that the one news source he definitely follows is TechMeme. For more than 2 years and nearly 700 episodes, The Tech Meme Ride Home has been Silicon Valley's favorite tech news podcast. The Tech Meme Ride Home is a daily podcast, only 15 to 20 minutes long. And every day by 5 p.m. Eastern, it's all the latest tech news. But it's more than just headlines. You could get a robot to read you the headlines if you want. The Tech Meme Ride Home is all the context around the latest news of the day. It's all the top stories, the top posts and tweets and conversations about those stories, as well as behind-the-scenes analysis. The Tech Meme Ride Home is like TLDR as a service. The folks at Tech Meme are online all day, reading everything so they can catch you up. So listen to the one podcast anyone who's anyone in Silicon Valley listens to every single day. Search our podcast app now for Ride Home and subscribe to the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. All right, now back to the show.
Okay, so I guess are these all topological spaces we're talking about?
Sure. Okay.
And I think when I mentioned before having interconnected nodes, that's more of maybe. I don't know if it's the right terminology, but I would think that would be kind of like a network topology.
Exactly.
Other than possibly not having distance in there, what's the key difference?
So that's actually a good example where distance doesn't matter. Like, let's suppose we are on a communication network or a computer network, right? And okay. So that is a network topology. Let's say there are like three workstations and they're all connected to each other. So that's like a triangle topology. I don't know if that's the technical term. I just made that up.
I would call it a ring topology. But
okay, yeah, it's a ring topology with three, sure. Yeah. And then, I don't know, you could imagine like the top of the triangle. Maybe I'll connect to one more computer, but it's only connected to me. So now it's like a triangle with a thing dangling off it. Right. And so that is the shape of the network. When someone says network topology, that's the shape of the network. You can kind of compare one ring technology with three nodes, another ring technology with topology with three nodes. They're kind of the same in a sense. So that is that sort of discrete version of topology. Now, there's a problem with that when you come to continuous space. Like, I don't know if you remember the Anthony Aguirre, I think it was episode, was it 83, when I asked him about space? Because we still don't know whether...
Yeah, 83 and 84.
Yeah, so 83 was the physics one. And so I asked him whether, like, you know, physical space really is real numbers. And I don't think it is, but I think, like, yes, that is definitely the best way we have of measuring physical space. So... In a network topology, I can ask you directly, what are your neighbors, right? If let's say it's a computer network, right, and you're
right,
on it.
Because I know in that three node ring topology that if I'm node A, nodes B and C are my neighbors.
Exactly. So continuous space, you've got a problem, because let's suppose we're dealing with real numbers, okay, the real number line, all the numbers. What are the neighbors for the number one? Okay, you could say, well, you know, first guess might be, well, maybe two is neighbor to one. Well, no, there are lots of numbers between one and two. There's 1.1, 1.2, 1.3.
And yeah, this sounds a little bit like Zeno's paradox.
Right.
We can just infinitely subdivide the space between.
Right. So you can't actually talk about what the neighbors of one are. And this is why the mathematics on top of that underlie topology is very seems complex at first, and they don't explain this, which to me is weird, because it's actually a very interesting problem. And so and mathematicians, and I think they kind of came up with like the solution to this, rather like, you know, the 1800s, early 1900s, but the general solution is like in something called a neighborhood. So I can't tell you directly what the neighbors of the number one are, but I can tell you if I have a set that's got them all. So let me give you an example. Like, let's suppose that I'm talking about a set of all the numbers between 0.9 and 1.1, okay? Include 0.9 and 1.1. Let's say they're not included, but we're including all the numbers between.
Okay.
I kind of now have the point at one sort of suspended in jello there. I know it's in the interior of that set. So that set is therefore called a neighborhood of one. And so...
And how... What the... To call it the confidence bounds is probably an inappropriate term, but that's kind of how I'm visualizing it. How wide that is completely arbitrary.
No. So you don't just have one neighborhood. Any time you have a set that kind of that kind of surrounds the point. So it's not okay if the point's on the boundary. It has to like surround the point.
Right.
So it's like got all the neighbors. That's always called a neighborhood. And so neighborhoods have to have certain properties. Like if you take the intersection of two neighborhoods, it's still a neighborhood, for example.
I assume that a neighborhood doesn't require the point you're concerned with being in the center of it, as long as it's not on the edge.
Exactly. Because there is no center, because there's no distance.
Ah,
Yeah.
So, but then you don't even know how close you are to the edge. You just know that you're not on the edge.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
it's bringing to mind the Heisenberg uncertainty principle that I can know I'm inside of a group, but I can't know where I am inside the group.
I mean, I guess so. So it's more like, in a network topology, I'm going to give you a set of computers and you look at all your neighbors, and if all your neighbors are in that set, then you're like, yep, that's a neighborhood. And this is just the equivalent idea in continuous space. But whereas in a network topology, I have to actually count the individual machines. Here, I can't do that. There is no individual machine. I just have to know whether I'm surrounded or not.
So if the question is the... I don't know what it is about the way you just explained it, but it invoked in my mind drawing curves and circles around things. So does that bring us back into the shape side of this?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could draw any shape behind it, but this is why continuity is such a difficult concept, because you're not talking about going from this point to this point to this point to this point, but you can say things like, hey, if I have a neighborhood that's like small enough, then something's going to happen. Like I'm going to get, sometimes you can't talk about something happening at a point exactly, but in terms of like, you know, calculus, in terms of limits, you could say, hey, if I have a neighborhood of that point, if I'm like in all the points surrounding it, then I could talk about something happening. And usually you want those neighborhoods that you're... So a neighborhood could be any size. Like, you know, you could say, give me all the numbers. Well, that's obviously a neighborhood. But usually when you... The neighborhoods you're interested in are the ones that are very small.
Hmm. I'm trying to think of a contextual example for using this, for why you would want to move from a discrete network topology approach to this continuous topological space approach, and I'm grasping at straws here.
It's interesting. Like there are a lot of times in mathematics where we jump from discrete to continuous, and it's sometimes you get interesting insights into continuous, and then when you get back to computation, you have to go back to discrete again. So, wouldn't you admit that like sometimes when looking at the continuous analog of something, it's more you get insights that you wouldn't necessarily have otherwise? Does that kind of make
sure,
sense?
Sure, sure. Just, I mean, even at the simplest level, that it allows, you know, interpolation and extrapolation in a way that a discrete model doesn't really.
Right. So I'm trying to think of like, so I don't know if I should even try to give the definition of continuity, but maybe I'll try, right? It's like, okay, now I have to talk about like continuous map, which is, I don't even want to start talking about functions and stuff now, but it's like, okay, let's suppose I am measuring something on this space. Okay, and at the value of one, let's say the measurement, or any point, let's say the value of at some point A, the measurement is 6, okay? Then I should be able to, and let's say I want to be very close within 6. Let's say I want to be within a millionth of it. I should be able to create some neighborhood around that point where it's always going to be within those bounds. if that makes sense. So it's like you're not like jumping uncontrollably. In other words, you should be able to get close enough to the point where the values that are in the neighborhood should get close enough to six. Am I completely losing everyone here?
I think that makes sense.
Okay. Okay. I mean,
I don't know if we're over or under explaining it here.
Well, this stuff took me like years to understand what they're talking about. So if you even have an inkling of what I'm saying, then I'm happy.
So I don't know if we want to dig more on continuity and topological space here, or if we want to take the jump to the pointless topology.
Right.
But so what on earth is that? If this whole concept of topology in particular is coming out of, at least in the discrete model, we start off with these points and the relationships to each other. Is pointless topology simply moving to the continuous model, or because it certainly sounds like an oxymoron?
Right. So no, most topology is not pointless. Like you start with the points and then you ask, okay, what are the neighborhoods of each point? Pointless topology gets rid of the points entirely, or it actually doesn't get rid of the points entirely, but it actually doesn't take points as the main structure that you're looking at. So first of all, there's this concept in topology called an open set. And an open set is a neighborhood of all its points. So that basically means that like any point inside the open set is in the interior, and you could wiggle a little bit in every direction. So let's suppose we're not talking about the basketball now, we're talking about the interior of the basketball, okay? So every point in the interior, I could go a little bit in any direction and still be inside the basketball because I'm not including the boundary.
That makes sense.
Okay. So a lot of the results in topology can it kind of comes down to looking at what the open sets are in that system. And so there's this one strain of thought where we could say, okay, what if we just get rid of points entirely and just say, okay, here are the open sets. So for example, in terms of numbers, those open sets would be what are called open intervals. So for example, like it would just be like stuff that doesn't contain the boundary. So let's say all numbers between 0 and 1, but not including 0 and 1. That would be an open set. But if it did include 0 and 1, then it would not be an open set. And then, of course, like you could take unions of them, so you could have like a few of them, and they would still be open. But essentially, the idea is let's just consider open sets as the like fundamental unit, and then you could use those to define points. Whereas like it's a point is the collection of open sets that contain it, and then there are certain rules that has to obey. But essentially, the idea is that a area of of a certain extent has to be considered. So you can't consider points. You actually have to have a little substance in there, which, if you think about it, is actually in some ways more like closer to describing the real world, because any measurement that you take has some error bounds around it. And so you're never actually talking about points. You're usually talking about like a little bit of space.
So the mental image that I have right now, and tell me if this is completely off base, but I'm picturing a Venn diagram. So
sure.
For our listeners, Venn diagram, it's that classic. You've got two circles and they overlap a little bit in between, and it describes two different things and the features that they have in common. So maybe like round things and sports equipment and basketballs would be in the intersection there because they are both sports equipment and round, whereas baseball bats would not be in the overlap. So I'm envisioning that this.
But they're all type topologically equivalent, but not to. I'm now confusing things, but okay, go ahead.
I'm envisioning this pointless topology approach. If I want to describe the equivalent of a point there, is that I just need to keep drawing more and more circles on that Venn diagram so that I can narrow and narrow and further narrow the the section right in the middle where all these circles overlap, and try and more clearly define and constrain that ever shrinking space in the center. Is there a kernel of,
yes,
of accuracy to that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So here's a mind blowing thing, but it's, I don't even know if I should get into this because this is going to be way too complicated. But okay, so with open sets, you have, you know, set union and set intersection. I don't know if I have to define that here, but union is like you combine the two sets together, so you get something bigger. And intersection is like, you know, in the Venn diagram, it's like the little piece in the middle. It's like, what's the, what's the,
the overlap.
What's the overlap?
Or
exactly.
The commonality, yeah.
Right. And so the set of open sets, or so a space, a topological space of open sets it forms something called a lattice, a bounded lattice in mathematics, which means you could take intersections of them, you could take unions of them, and then there's a top and a bottom. There's the whole thing. And then there's the empty set, right? That's the bounded part. And so if you map that one lattice onto another, you could say that it preserves union and intersection, whereas like, okay, the you take the union here and then you map it to another lattice. So every point in one lattice is mapped to another point in another lattice. And like if the unions, if the unions still work and intersections still work and all that after you've mapped it, then you say it's a lattice preserving map, right? This is all like category theory stuff. So anyway, I don't know if anyone's following me, but I'm just going to keep going here. So the Boolean set, which is just the set of 1 and 0, is also a bounded lattice, right? Because you have 0 and you have 1, so you have empty and you have the whole thing, and it's also a lattice because you could take, like, the union of 0 and 1 is 1, and the union of 0 and 0 is 0. And so you could take unions and intersections there. So if you take the set of open sets, or so if you take a lattice of open sets and you do a lattice-preserving map onto Boolean space, onto binary space, that map actually is a point.
I feel like you lost me in the last step there.
Right. So it actually defines, if you can define such a map, it actually ends up defining a point in the original space, in the space of open sets. God, topology, so crazy. And this is like category theory now, so I don't even know. This is like, and I'm not necessarily the one to talk about this either, because there are definitely mathematicians who've been in way deeper than I have done it, like, you know, professionally, but that's just the way I see it. So
let's assume for a minute that I've understood what you're laying down here.
Yeah. I might have to draw it out.
Let's take a step back. And you mentioned this is useful for machine learning.
Well, I don't know if it is.
Or AI.
I don't like, no one uses it. So who knows?
Okay. So I guess, Well, let's take a further step back then.
Okay.
And for those of us who may not in our spare time want to geek out on infinitely cool mathematical ideas, what's the relevance of this to our average listener? Or is that a trap question?
Well, I mean, it says it right in the name, pointless topology. I don't know if it has a point, but I guess topology in general has lots of point. But, I just think it's an interesting way of looking at problems and looking at the world where you're just thinking about the connections between things and you're kind of setting aside your notions of distance and form, and then in some ways it's kind of a different way to approach problems, and maybe it's a way where you can kind of look for bias or eliminate bias.
So when we say we're not concerned with distance, but we're concerned with like the shape
Well, not I shouldn't even say the shape. I should say like the form, because you could change the shape. You just can't. You,
so what
they
is,
usually
what is
say
form
is,
in
yeah,
this,
you usually
in
say
context.
You just can't cut and glue. So, or if you do cut and glue, you're changing the topological space.
Well, I was going to try and reduce this to we don't care about distance. It's about who you know what else you're connected to is
exactly
is that okay.
So if you cut, but, if you but, cut, you're not you're removing connections, and if you glue, you're adding connections.
And so that knowledge of what those connections are that defines, I guess, the possible shapes that could be taken on.
Exactly. Yeah. So then you could take on. Then you're like, okay, now we know the connections. Now we can take on multiple shapes. So you might not want to get into the mathematics, but it's an interesting idea to think about problems where it's like, okay, you know, the connections are all that matter. So let me see if I can think about that in a different way without, you know, with putting aside my preconceived notion of which connections are more important and which aren't, which is sort of a distance metric, right? Because like, if you sort of say, you know, distance is sort of saying, you know, which connections are closer and which are further away.
Okay, so the other thing that's popping into my brain right now is, and it's been a while since I've looked at any of the white papers on this, but there's I might have the terminology wrong, but some sort of network analysis in a communications paradigm, which has been used in intelligence work in the last 10, 15, 20 years to look at. You know, you take person A and who are they talking to? And then who are all those people talking to? And who are those people talking? And you kind of move out in maybe not concentric rings, but in an expanding spider and see what the connections between different players are. And that's one way you can determine what types of things someone might be involved in, even if you can't access the content of their communications, but just by looking at who they're communicating with. And that could potentially fit into this that you're not necessarily concerned with, you know, how physically far apart they are if they're talking to each other. That kind of negates the distance
or
there.
Actually,
but also you're not so concerned with how much they talk with each other as you are that they are that a connection between these two nodes exists.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, you do care how much they spoke to each other or how recently or how long the calls are. But you don't really know how to, you know, turn that into a score right away. So this is graph theory. This is like, you know, social network theory, and it's related. It is topology. It's highly related to topology, but you know, it's the discrete side of it. I think that's exactly the right place to. I think what popped into your mind is exactly the right way to be thinking, because it's like we don't we have the connections, but we don't know what they mean yet. And so let's see what the connections look like. And then on top of that, we can sort of, you know, give them weight after just looking at the connections themselves, if that makes sense.
OK, so I think maybe we've landed on.
Let me give an example. Like, let me take this forward. I think this is important. Like, let's say someone says, "Okay, the number of times that two people speak to each other, that's how close the connection is," and that's what I'm going to use. And they're totally stuck on that, and then they're not coming to the right conclusions. And then when someone says, "Well, wait a minute, this is a network. We don't really know what the distances are. Let's try to change it around a little bit. Let's try to do different things." Then maybe they can find the whatever they're trying to find more easily. I don't know. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. This is a big thing to wrap our heads around. So
yeah.
Perhaps we will have to revisit it at a later date and see if we can put some more contextual spin on it.
Yeah.
Wait
till we talk about knot theory.
Well, actually, that was one of the things that popped in my head when we were talking about kind of contorting shapes. Because that you know, if you're taking your mug and you know, flattening it and twisting it, and that very much gets into the realm of knot theory, which Other than like a 10-minute video that I've watched, I have no deep understanding of. But it, right. But it looks super cool.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, so a knot is just if you take a string and you tie it and you glue the ends together. And
in this context, you're talking like literally a string. We're not talking about like string theory in physics.
No.
Or strings of letters. Yeah. We're talking like the concept of a physical piece of twine.
Right, exactly. And so it's like, can you make them look similarly? Oh, here's a mind-blowing thing about it. Think about a donut, okay? The surface of a donut. And you know, imagine it's like really long and skinny. So let's say it's like the crust of a pizza, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, you got that image in your mind? Okay. Let's suppose that I cut it at one point. So I cut the crust of the pizza.
But just on one side of the ring.
Just on one side of the ring, and then like I pull it out and make it a long line. And then let's suppose like I tie a little knot and I re-glue it together. Okay?
Yeah.
So now I have a knot. So you could actually now remember the moving cities example I gave where we have the same neighbors as before. If yep. we all lived on the surface of the old Taurus, the old donut, the old pizza crust, and then we all moved into the tied up one, that is topologically equivalent because we'll all have the same neighbors. But you can't continuously deform the first one into the second one without cutting and pasting. And
right. So I was going to say, you can't get back to the way it was before.
Right. And so those are.
Yeah.
Right. Those are two different types of topological transformations. One's like, hey, can I make the whole jump and keep all the neighbors, or do I have to like continuously deform it? And there are technical terms for this, but those are actually two different questions, which is really interesting sometimes.
So this is absolutely fascinating, but it again brings me back to the question, okay, other than esoteric mathematics, what use is this?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. And I'm sure knot theory must have some application to you know, either something more fundamental in mathematics or some real world application, but I can't mentally make the jump.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It's just interesting. I think it does have some applications in terms of like string theory, like how, like in physics, but that's beyond me. I don't really know.
Well, perhaps we need to find a knot theory expert to come talk some sense into it. I would be very interested to listen to that. It's a little bit different than our normal fare, but an episode that doesn't start off with talking about politics is always welcome.
Well, yeah. So this is a very different episode. So how do you think it went?
I certainly understand topology and pointless topology better, but I'm still not sure. I like the idea of kind of holding this in reserve as a way to think differently.
Yeah, I've been doing that for 5 years.
But I'm not sure how to trigger that in the right moment.
All right. Well, we'll think about that. All right. So I think that's all we wanted to say about this topic. We have anything else for today?
I'm going to go put my brain on ice after this.
Good luck. Well, you know, we're working out the brain. We're getting out those local maximums. Reaching different local maximums, so, you know, getting
if it's not mind. Confusing, you're not learning.
Exactly. So, all right, maybe I'll post some of the books that I've read on the show notes page, localmaxradio.com/133. We're at now.
And maybe if you can scrounge up some diagrams that aren't too obtuse, that might help.
Yeah.
People trying to follow along.
I can't. I hate making diagrams for the website. I know I should, but it's like, it's too time consuming. You'll have to find somewhere else. But I'll link to some books. And I did want to talk about last week's episode. I know you listened to that with Rob Bernstein. That was this is a very different episode today. But that was a lot of fun. I hope people enjoy. I would like to see the intersection of people who enjoyed today's episode and last week's episode, because that would be a
those
great
are the kind
local...
of people you want to invite over to your cocktail party or barbecue.
Yeah,
they'll have interesting things to say about pretty much anything.
Back when we used to have events and stuff like that, but
well, you know, I have yet to do it, but I've had a couple of people suggest, oh, maybe we should do like a socially distant thing, you know,
at
your house or you know in a park and.
I don't do socially distant anymore. That is so May 2020.
Well, so I recently...
I've survived this long. What's it going to take? Yeah, we've got 0.3%, less than like 0.3% positive rate in New York City now and the testing. It's like, how low do you need it to get? And it's not like it's the up. It's not like it's growing exponentially anymore. It's...
Not to get into topics that will not be evergreen, but I...
Well, whatever. We're done with the topology stuff.
Yeah. I hope that the rest of the country can be as confident in where they're sitting as you are in the near future.
Yeah.
But so what I was saying, speaking of surviving, I recently survived another year, and we briefly contemplated...
All right. Happy birthday. Like,
Do we want to invite people, you know, who aren't that far away to come over and like we'll leave some cake out on the deck and you can come take a piece and then, you know, step back 20 feet and stand out in the deck and we've got some chairs set. And it was just too much hassle, especially with the little kids and everything going on. And we wimped out and didn't do it. But my work is talking about we're sick of doing like virtual happy hours that we need to do. We need to like brown bag it in a park somewhere or something.
Yeah.
So we'll see when I break the seal on that. With kids going back to daycare next week, it's only a matter of time.
I mean, I feel like the number of people who have it will go to zero and people will still be crazy.
Well, I mean, nothing in this situation has convinced me that we're going to solve crazy.
I mean, if it gets worse, it could get better, right? No? Or does it only get worse?
There's the only way out is through philosophy, but I don't know if I want to embrace that for everything.
I mean, I think that, well, you know what's weird? I go to the Foursquare office these days. It's like a 150-person office in Flatiron in Midtown Manhattan, and I'm the only one there. Now, because I moved close by, so I go, but it's literally, I have the whole office to myself. So I guess I don't have to wear a mask if there's no one there. But I love how, like, when they invited us back, remember to, you know, stay two desks apart and, you know, this and this. And, like, my desk is one of the ones with the X's on it. Like, don't use that desk. It doesn't matter. I just sit down at my desk and use it because there's no one else there in the whole place.
Oh, you rebel.
There might be one other person. But
flaunting the signage.
Well, I'm using the best monitor there, and I'm using somebody else's iPhone charger. And why not? I'll charge my AirPods, too, because there's another charger, like another three desks down. Nobody's there. It's great. I mean, I wish, you know, some of the people I was working with were there because that I would get more done. But it's so hard to focus alone. I think... I don't know what life's going to be like, but I think remote is here to stay, but not like this.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that many people in kind of the business manager role, but I did recently talk with a friend of mine who owns his own business, and he said that I think it was just this past month they got out of their lease, and they're not going to have an office for the remainder of 2020.
Wow.
And you know, I think the catalyst for them to again procure office space is going to have to be pretty high.
I feel like it's definitely
making changes.
It's so hard for me to get like started on a project or a task when I'm sitting at home. I have to really mentally, like, you know, have tons of willpower to do it. And I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I mean, I guess the podcast's going fine. Podcasting is the one thing that I'm able to focus on.
Well, at least usually it doesn't feel like work. It's a little different.
Right.
While we do have to provide our contractually obligated, you know, once a week, somewhere between 20 minutes and, we're creeping up on an hour here, but you know, it's we're not filling out a time card for this, so it's a little bit different.
Exactly. All right. Cool. I think that's all I have for this week. So unless there's anything else, I think it's time to head out.
Yeah. We'll see what next week has in store for us. We'll be out the other side of the DNC convention be thrown right into the madness that I'm sure will be the RNC convention.
yeah. Well, back to that. Well, it is the season, the 1 out of 4 year season.
The 18-month-long season.
Yeah, I should get. Yeah, but this is the real deal now. I'm gonna try to find some guests too. I don't have any specific guests lined up, but I have some people I can ask and who I'm excited about. So we'll see who I can get over the next few weeks. But maybe I can get a topologist or a category theorist on the show. That would be great.
That would be pretty neat. I imagine we could also have some pretty interesting conversations about polling as we enter the end times. So I don't know if there are any listeners out there who are pollsters. Nate Silver, I know you're listening. get in touch with us.
Maybe I can get
we have questions.
Alex Andora back on the show to talk.
Yeah, about. So, that's right. Yeah. Well, and the other thing I forgot to mention is with the convention this week, a lot of Metaculous predictions I've made have been resolving. So it's time to go in and make some new ones. Oh, that's right.
We got to talk about that because I made one. I had, first of all, I didn't realize
You drafted a question.
I drafted a question. I also had one that got resolved yesterday, which I didn't realize was still open, which was, will Joe Biden be the Democratic nominee? And apparently I said yes, but I said yes a long time ago when it wasn't over. And it was finally decided today, and I got a lot of points for it.
Yeah, most of the ones that have been resolved in the last week or two were ones I've completely forgot I made that prediction because it was so long ago.
Yeah. And so I made a question asking whether there will be a Trump-Biden debate. Because I saw a lot of people saying, oh, it might not happen, or it shouldn't happen, or Biden shouldn't debate Trump and whatnot. And so I thought it would be interesting to put that out to that community. And I think it's currently at 80%, or my prediction is higher. My prediction is like 92%. I think it's almost certainly going to happen, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, let me take a peek here. So I need to find it here. Okay, here we go. Yep, it's sitting. It looks like the community prediction is at 85% right now. We've got 44 predictions have been made. So
yeah.
If you're hearing this, go out there and make your prediction. You've got till September 15th to lock that in.
Oh, now it's at 85. Okay, and I put mine at 90, I guess. I think I was thinking 92, and then I saw the community at 80. I was like, well, I don't know. That's one or two points different.
My current prediction is also at 90.
Okay.
But I may revise it in the next couple of weeks.
Sure. I think
we've got just under a month.
I lost money and predict it because I didn't think Kamala Harris would be the vice president nominee.
I've heard that the VP nomination market was insane, right up until the last minute.
Yeah, I wasn't even paying attention to the last minute, but I really thought that wasn't. Well, I don't know. I'll try to think about where I went wrong there.
Well, we gotta identify the flaws in our methodology and see if we can improve our predictive process for the next time around.
My methodology for that was just to look at it and be like, they can't do that. But I guess I was wrong. They wouldn't do that. But oh well. That's where you get into trouble and predict it.
It's interesting the differences between predict it predictions and those on Metaculous, since there's no money on the line in Metaculous, but it feels much more scientific.
I think predict it. First of all, it's not a real market because there are such caps, so you don't have really smart big money players in there. And I mean, some people might be smart, but also like the comments is all just political, like trash talk.
You get some of that on certain questions in Metaculous, but I feel like it's moderated away from that for the most part.
Yeah. I feel like Metaculous is being more scientific.
This is a topic that I think we will be able to discuss at least several more opportunities in the next couple of months. So we shouldn't invest too much in it just yet.
All right. Cool. Well, this would be a good time to solicit input, because we went over a lot this show. localmaxradio@gmail.com if you want to weigh in. All right. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. Remember to check out the website at localmaxradio.com if you want to contact me, the host, or ask a question that I can answer on the show. Send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. This show is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and more. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe to The Local Maximum on one of these platforms and to follow my Twitter account at Max Sklar. Have a great week. Feel the power.